supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Mission accomplished. That's the message from city officials today during a press conference debriefing yesterday's victory parade for the Eagles. Details from WHYY's Aaron Mozell.
Hundreds of thousands of fans came out to celebrate the Eagles' first-ever Super Bowl title, and most of them, the vast majority, behaved themselves. Police Commissioner Richard Ross says his department made two arrests all day.
A female, one down in South Philadelphia, decided to rush onto the parade line and actually had to be arrested and decided to assault one of the police officers. And the second one was just an assault, civilian to civilian.
Police also responded to two stabbings in the area of the parade, though Ross says it's unclear if they were parade-related. The city handed out five citations for disorderly conduct. Ross says four police cars were also damaged during the parade.
They weren't trying to destroy the car as much as they were trying to get a better vantage point.
The parade wasn't designed to be a moneymaker, and its financial impact on the city is unclear at this point. Fred Stein, one of the parade's organizers, said the event likely cost several million dollars.
The city overtime costs have not been, you know, compiled yet. But everything else is somewhere around $2 to $3 million.
Philadelphia's hospitality agencies found that hotel revenues went up more than $3 million during the weekends with a playoff game compared to the same weekends last year. But on Friday, Mayor Kenney didn't seem too concerned about getting more economic details, at least not immediately.
You can't put a price on the psychic benefit that we experienced and that we can actually win well and win respectably and celebrate respectfully.
It's a feeling he hopes, knock on wood, will happen again. He's probably not alone. Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
Volatility in the markets is much in the news this week. Let's take stock of public perceptions with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, analysts are quick to note that there is no direct correlation between the trajectory of the stock market and the strength of the economy. Having said that, to what extent are Americans paying attention?
Well, Dave, we know that for 45% of Americans, it has less direct relevance because they don't own stock. 54% of Americans tell us they do own stock when we last updated that. 2% said they couldn't answer the question. That 54% is down, I should point out. There were times in the last couple of decades when we had two-thirds of Americans who said they were in the market. But in terms of these gyrations, this correction, whatever we want to call it, affecting Americans, about half have a little bit of interest in it because they own at least some stock, but almost half say they don't own stock, so therefore it's not a direct impact on their financial life.
Safe to say that those with the most disposable income are most invested?
Oh, yes. It's very correlated with income. As you might imagine, over 8 out of 10 Americans who have just $75,000 or more income say that they own stock, and that drops way down among people with lower incomes. Also related to education, those who have graduate degrees most likely to own stock, those who didn't graduate from high school very unlikely to own stock, and it's related to age. Only 24%, that's a key number. One out of four Americans who are under 30 say they are in the market, and that goes all the way up in middle age years to 61-64%. So clearly young people right now aren't being hurt as much because they don't have anything in the market at the moment.
Frank, I understand Gallup has new information on Americans' concerns or lack thereof that their jobs might be eliminated by artificial intelligence.
Yeah, very fascinating information. We did a big report in conjunction with Northeastern University about artificial intelligence, covered a lot of things about the potential for its impact on our lives. The big question, I think, for a lot of people is what impact all of this automation, robots, artificial intelligence is going to have on our jobs. And what's interesting here is we have denial. 75% of Americans say they think that artificial intelligence, including robots, will eliminate more jobs than it will create. So that's kind of an acceptance of the reality that it's going to be a real factor. But when we ask workers about your job, only about 25% say they think it would hurt or eliminate their jobs. So a lot of Americans may have blinders on. They're saying, yeah, it's going to have a big impact, but not my job.
What industries do they think will be most affected?
Well, we ask Americans just that question. Manufacturing and construction, Americans fairly strongly. Over 6 out of 10 said they believed it would eliminate jobs in that industry, manufacturing and construction. Retail, also near the top of the list. Transportation up there. And, of course, we've all heard about the elimination of long-haul truck drivers. Jobs, for example, if all of our long-haul trucks become automated and autonomous. Maybe taxi drivers will fade because we're going to have autonomous cars driving us all around. At the bottom of the list is lawyers, art people, design, entertainment, sports, media, social services, and healthcare. Those are the industries where Americans think the jobs are safer, at least as concerns robots and artificial intelligence.
So you pointed to that paradox, but I'm wondering if workers in manufacturing, retail, and transportation, for example, inordinately do feel that their jobs are vulnerable.
Well, the study didn't break out that specific of a category of workers themselves, but we do know that blue-collar workers, and by blue-collar we mean workers who have less than a college education, are more concerned about their jobs being lost than those who have higher levels of education.
Frank, Eagles fans in our region hardly have time to savor the victory in yesterday's parade, and now the Winter Olympics are upon us. Across the country, how much interest is there in goings-on in South Korea?
Well, less interest than we have tracked for previous Winter Olympics. Let me go back in time to 2002. It was Salt Lake City hosting the Olympics, and 58% of Americans said they intended to watch a great deal or a fair amount of those. Now, of course, that was in our country, so there might have been higher levels of interest for that reason. But then in the Olympics, Winter Olympics in 2006 in Turin, the number was down. The Sochi Olympics in Russia in 2014, it was down from that to about 46% intend to watch. But now we're down to just 39% of Americans. We just finished asking them about intending to watch the Olympics in South Korea. So it's been a steady decline. Why, you ask? It could be that the Olympics themselves simply have less interest for some reason. Or it could be part of this major decline that we see in people watching any kind of sporting event or even kinds of events like the Golden Globes or the Grammys or the Oscars. Those ratings have been down as well. People are just less likely to watch these big events on TV than they have been in the past.
Who is most interested in watching?
It's kind of a straight linear function. The older you are, the more likely you are to say you want to watch the Winter Olympics. 65 pluses, seniors, well over half say they plan to watch the Olympics, but that's only down to 31% among millennials 18 to 29.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. And as the Winter Olympics get underway in South Korea, figure skating, skiing, and hockey will draw the most attention. But a group in Delaware is eagerly anticipating the curling competition, as WHYY's Mark Eichmann explains.
There are not many Olympic sports the average viewer at home can participate in with little effort. Not many of us have the talent or nerve to ski jump from a nearly 400-foot-tall tower. But when it comes to accessible sports, curling is about as doable as they come.
It's a very competitive game, but you don't need to have a lot of experience to succeed at it. It caters to everyone from 6 years old to 99.
Bridget O'Grady is with the Diamond State Curling Club. The group hosts instructional leagues at an ice rink in Newark.
Curling is the most fun you can have on ice.
And while hockey fans may disagree with that, the sport of curling, which resembles shuffleboard on ice, is gaining popularity. Its appeal is growing in part because of the wild pants worn by the Norwegian curling team at the 2010 Games in Vancouver.
You know, if you say that thing with the pants and the brooms in the Olympics, then they usually know, because Norway made such a splash at the last Olympics with their crazy patterned pants.
The sport is relatively simple. Competitors slide 42-pound pieces of granite down the ice toward the target called the house. Teammates use brooms to speed the rocks along their way to the target at the orders of teammates. The teams competing this month in Pyeongchang may be competing for Olympic glory, but the Delaware Club plays for bragging rights and drinks.
It can get really heated and really serious, but at the end of the game, you're still friends with the people you're playing with, and honestly, etiquette for curling at a Bondspiel, which is a competition, is the winner of the game buys the losers a drink. So not only do you just get to have this competitive, fun, mental game, but you also then get to hang out with everybody and learn about them, learn about their curling experience, share tips with each other. It's great.
The Diamond State Curling Club is hoping another year of Olympic coverage will draw new players. They have Learn to Play programs for adults and children as young as 9. From the Delaware Desk, Mark Eichmann, WHYY News.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Philadelphia Theater Week is underway. It's a new 10-day-long citywide event during which theaters in Philadelphia are offering discounted ticket prices from $15 to $30, special performances, and events that reveal the nuts and bolts of putting on a show. The organization that coordinated the week, Theater Philadelphia, hopes to make this first run-through an annual event. WHYY's Peter Crimmin spoke with theater critic Howie Shapiro about what to expect.
Peter, it's the debut of Philly Theater Week this week, February 8th to 18th, actually. It's more than a week.
It's a new thing put on by Theater Philadelphia. Theater Philadelphia is perhaps best known for putting on the Barrymore Awards. But they are a theater support group. They help the theater industry and the theater sector in the city do what they need to do. And so they created this week, or this 10 days, where they're trying to promote theater. To my eye, it's a little bit like Restaurant Week.
Or it's like Philly Tech Week.
Maybe Tech Week,
or
yeah.
It's a way for the theater community to market itself with lower price tickets and try and get people to see things for the first time or go to little companies if they only go to big ones and that kind of stuff.
A lot of the events and shows that are part of Theater Week were already scheduled, but I understand that in addition, once this week got pulled together, people started just flooding to add more shows to cram into this week.
Yeah, it's a sign of the breadth of the theater community in the Philadelphia area that when they put a call out from Theater Philadelphia for shows, they not only got the ones that are running, and that makes up about 25% of the 80 different Theater Week events.
25% were already scheduled to happen.
Yeah.
That means 75% is like new stuff.
Yes, and mostly it's one-night stuff, and it's free. Or it's either 15 or 30 bucks. And those are screenings. Those are little shows going on all over town and actually through the region too. Or sometimes they're workshops, especially for people in the theater community who want to talk about playwriting. They want to talk about directing, that kind of thing.
Some of these shows are things that the artists already had in their back pockets. And they're kind of bringing them back to give them a new life. One that caught my eye was a radio drama by Karen Getz and Grace Gongluski. It's called Martha and Dottie. And they made this a few years ago, and now they're bringing it back for free. You can listen to it online for a window of time. You can access it for free.
The Free Library of Philadelphia is having an event. They're going to get you into the rare book room there, where there's a large theater collection. And it really shows the history of Philadelphia's theaters, which is more than a lot of people know, because this was a huge theater town 100 and some years ago, the Walnut was operating, and, you know, it'll be fun to see that.
Yeah, and a lot of the nature of theater, it tends to disappear when it's over, and the library does have this really great theater collection in its rare book room. I'm looking forward to that. It'll be a real treat to see it.
The way Theater Philadelphia is marketing this first attempt at Philly Theater Week is they've grouped a lot of the events. So, for instance, because they run during Valentine's Day, Philadelphia Theater Company is going to have a big band concert that's specially for Valentine's Day. Inish Nua, which specializes in drama and comedy from the British Isles, is going to have Love Lies and Taxidermy, which is supposed to be a funny play, which has to do with love. There's an open mic night at the Free Library where you can go and read your favorite love poem. And that sounds like a lot of fun. There's a lot of stuff like that. So they very cleverly group things, and you can find all of this at theaterphiladelphia.org. But Theater Philadelphia is one word with an R-E for theater, and that's important.
They create one place where you can access all this stuff. And as you say, you can buy discounted tickets, and so they make it really easy for you to go see theater right now when the spring season is starting to ramp up.
You know, Peter, you don't have to go to Center City to take part in Philly Theater Week. It's all over the place. There are theater companies doing stuff in Camden, Wilmington, Bristol. You can find a play at Quintessence Theater in Mount Airy. It's really across the region.
And it's across disciplines, too. I know Opera Philadelphia is putting on its show, Written on Skin. I'm looking forward to it. It's something new for the city, and it looks like it might be happening every year.
Yeah, I think it will be, and I'll see you at the theater.
WHYY's Peter Crimmins chatting with theater critic Howie Shapiro. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Our news director is Eugene Son. Assistant news director, Katie Colinari. John Mussoni is assistant vice president for news operations. At the helm this week, Bob Alls and Al Banks. Sandra Clark is vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller. NewsWorks Tonight.